This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
I've never been more frightened to bring a guest onto this podcast than I am with Steli Efti. And here's the reason why. Steli has a startup in San Francisco, and it is a sales technology company. And I don't write about sales technology. I'm not interested in sales technology other than as a user. I don't promote other people's work. I don't advertise. I don't do any of these things. Those responsibilities in the sales community belong to Nancy Narden and Miles Austin, who both do it brilliantly. But I brought Steli on because he reached out to me. He's got game. He's an entrepreneur. And what we talk about is not his software. We talk about entrepreneurship. We talk about startup. We talk about sales organizations, particularly in startups, and the challenges they face. That's what makes this an interesting conversation. Here we go, in the arena with Steli Efti from Close.io. And may God have mercy on my soul. Steli, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic.
Because you're in Palo Alto and it's beautiful and you live among the rich and famous Silicon Valley elite, right?
Well, yes, and I'm talking to you. What could be better?
Tell us, introduce yourself to the community here at the In the Arena podcast. Tell people who you are and what you do.
So my name is Steli Efti. I'm originally from Greece, grew up in Germany for a big part of my life. And a little over 7 years ago, I decided to sell everything I had, bought a one-way ticket to Silicon Valley to build my first technology company. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and the latest venture that I started 3 years ago was actually focusing on part of my biggest strength and passion and the weaknesses that I saw and opportunities in Silicon Valley with technology companies, which was helping tech companies grow their sales. And so we were offering kind of a sales team on demand, you know, outsourced sales focused on startups and technology companies, helping them in the early days figuring out the sales model and then hopefully scaling it. And in the process, we built a secret sauce piece of software that we were just using internally to empower our salespeople that we've now released to the world called Close.io.
How 7 years ago, you say your whole life you're an entrepreneur, but that's not been that long because you're a young guy.
Yeah.
How old were you when you bailed out of Germany and moved to Silicon Valley?
So I bailed out of high school to start my first business when I was 17, 18. I bailed out from Europe to come to the US when I was 23.
23, you're young. So you sold everything. By selling everything, there probably wasn't all that much to sell because you're
really
23.
I was involved. I had two small businesses at the time, so I sold my shares in those companies. It took a while to find either to negotiate with my partners to buy me out and these kind of things. And then, you know, yes, I didn't have family. I didn't have kids and lots of properties. But I liquidated everything I could to get as much cash together as possible. And then I jumped into the cold water and into a big adventure.
There's a dude that just crawled by the floor behind us.
Behind you, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling people to not have breakfast at 10 this morning in the back room. So probably somebody tried to be undetected. I hear him laughing.
This is a podcast. It's all audio.
So there's not going to be any
just video. So you and I can see each other. Go ahead, man. Have your breakfast. It's all good.
All right. I'll let them know.
tell me about you come to Silicon Valley and you start outsource sales operations and you're helping companies with that. And you identify these challenges and you build this piece of software around that. But what's interesting is the challenges you saw startups having. What was it that you recognized, like, they got this wrong, they don't get it, they're not doing good work because?
Yeah. So I have to clarify that the first business that I started 7 years ago was not the outsourced sales business. It was a completely different company, and I worked on that for four or five years and ultimately failed, at least at what I wanted to accomplish with that business. But during that time, I've made a lot of friends. I was involved in lots of other people's ventures and startups. And especially in a place like Silicon Valley, which is awesome, there's a high concentration and focus on, you know, technical talent and engineering and product, which is great. So there's a lack of expertise and experience and maybe, you know, cultural acceptance of the importance of being able to market and sell what you've built. You can't just build it and they will come. You'll actually have to go out there in the real world and interact with real people and find out what they like and don't like and find out how to communicate what your value proposition is. And that was something that I saw a lot of startups struggle, although they had a great product, they didn't know how to sell it.
What's interesting, I love when you talk to entrepreneurs because you're so open about failure and it's not an identity for you. And I wrote this not too long ago. It's not an identity, it's an event that happened and you learned from it. And when you talk to civilians, you know, regular citizens that go to work every day and you talk about failure is this identity. But when you talk to an entrepreneur, they're like, well, I did this business, we worked really hard at it for 4 years. I couldn't make the vision work and I failed and I moved on and now I'm doing this next thing. And everybody's got that story that's an entrepreneur. It's just like, oh yeah, yeah, and I learned this and I learned that, now I'm doing this different thing. And you know, you just keep moving without internalizing any of it as like, I'm a failure because I failed. Everybody's got the same story. What was the first thing that you were doing that didn't work out?
So that business was actually an educational platform. So I grew up having a lot of problems with the traditional education system, but eventually I got lucky to kind of separate education from learning and actually discover a passion for learning. So when I came here, I wanted to build a platform that allowed people around the world to teach and study from each other in kind of virtual classrooms, kind of an open global school. And you know, we were very early on and made a lot of mistakes, specifically also technical and product mistakes, because I didn't have any experience building, you know, web products. But you're right in terms of like failure not being, you know, failure not becoming part of your identity, but being an event. I love that quote. And I think that it's that's something where entrepreneurship and sales meets, it's very close, right? If you're in sales and you try to avoid failure or avoid people telling you no and rejection, it's going to be incredibly hard, if not impossible, for you to strive and succeed. And it's similar as an entrepreneur. You can't avoid rejection. You can't avoid failure indefinitely. You have to learn from it and move on.
Absolutely. What go into the mistakes that you saw sales organizations making when you did the second business, when you came on and you started helping others?
Yeah. So many of them. I think a lot of times what we encountered was kind of a helplessness from the top in terms of how to approach sales. So there were technical founders building a product, and then through personal network, raising some money, and then through that network, finding some early customers. So the early days, you know, we're only talking about the ones that were successful in the early days, right? They got to that point. Once they got to the point, and now the question was, okay, how do we grow sales now? How do we grow our customer base? There was kind of a general helplessness from the top. Of like, I don't really know how to do this. I've never built a sales team. I don't really know how to sell. What should we do? And sometimes that helplessness translated into really bad ideas. Like, you know, let's hire people that are going to be, you know, that have no sales background, that don't have the core kind of energy that you want in sales, but that are really like passionate product advocates. And that can work, but it could also lead to things like 2.5 hour product demos with customers where the salesperson would talk for 2 hours and 20 minutes and show every little button and every little link and never actually talk about the value of problems or solutions. And lots of other things where just an enormous amount of time was wasted on, you know, being in love with features and products and not on like taking time to understand customers and offer solutions to them. And then the other thing that I saw a lot of times startups do wrong was kind of the idea that just because they had a few early customers, they were ready to scale. And they were like, let's hire 100 salespeople and just, you know, scale this thing. And then when you ask them some very basic fundamental questions about the sales process, you could within 3 minutes realize that they had no sales model that was ready to scale yet at all. They just had some early success, but that was not replicable. You couldn't repeat that at all. So there was no sense in going out and hiring tons and tons of salespeople because they had no leads, they had no sales process. So there was really nothing to scale yet. And kind of those are some typical mistakes that I saw again and again. I still see every day today.
The big one that I see, and I have a lot of people, they come to the blog and they got a product and they're like, we want to give you the product for free and we want you to use it. And that's not what they want. They want me to talk about the product and they're trying to get attention. But the big sin that I see them, a lot of tech companies making coming out of Silicon Valley, at least the ones that reach out to me, is because we can do something with technology, we think that there's a product. And because we can count this thing, I can count that they opened their email so I can gauge their receptivity to buying. No, you can count, but you can't, you're not able to make the kind of the contextual leap to say this means this when this happens, because it doesn't mean that. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, and there has to be all these conversations. But we can count a lot of things, so we see a lot of software, we can count things. We see a lot of success in social networks, so I've seen a whole bunch of people put things on they put them in my inbox about, you know, we're doing a new social thing, and it's just for salespeople, and it's going to be great because, you know, LinkedIn's not right, and you know, Facebook's not right, they're all wrong, and we're right. Yeah. And it's like, I know, but it's not a product unless you can create a customer. And I see so many of them that want to do something because sales, we do love technology and sales. There's no question about it. And Salesforce.com has done a terrific job. There's a bunch of great apps. There's a bunch of things that people use. So people think, well, if we can count this, people should use it too. But there's not really a product. What's your experience there?
Yeah, I agree. I think that just because something can be done, it doesn't necessarily mean that it should be or that it will gain real traction in the market. A lot of times people say, if your product is not 10 times better than something that already exists, people will not want to change their life. They will not want to even change the home screen of their phones and download another app. Like, just people don't want to change what they're doing if it doesn't bring significant value to their lives. I think a lot of times entrepreneurs, and I think that's a necessary evil. I think entrepreneurs are just so in love with their ideas and what they're doing that they're just constantly overestimating the value that they're creating. Once in a while, that's really good because sometimes people work on things that everybody tells them is stupid, and then it turns out that everyone was wrong.
Right.
But more often than not, we are right, you know, when we're critical of ideas. And entrepreneurs tend to overstate and over expect what they're doing to really change people's lives, because people don't care as much as you do as an entrepreneur about what you're working on. They just don't. And I think sales and technology is such an interesting thing because, you know, when you think about the different stages that empowered salespeople from the days where you had to go knock from one door to another with your suitcase of product, and then, you know, telephony was like one of the biggest advancements probably in sales, allowing you to reach people beyond a specific territory that you're physically bounded by, and being able to reach people in different time zones and all that. That was a tremendous empowerment and made a big change in salespeople's lives. I think after that, the next really big one was probably email, right? Now being able to not just reach people beyond your territory, but communicate one to many, you know, and communicate asynchronously so you don't have to necessarily answer and communicate in real time all the time. These two things, phone and email, probably made a dramatic difference in product sales productivity and salespeople's lives. So I think that salespeople tend to be open to wanting to have tools at their disposal to do their job better, but that can go overboard to a degree where you're just trying to hack it. You're just trying to, I see this a lot of time with social. It's such a good idea where all these people are telling me, well, I'm spending, you know, 3 hours researching people on Twitter and LinkedIn and on the web and their blog and reading everything before I give them the first call. And, you know, it seems like trying to, again, avoid rejection or avoid failure by being overly prepared instead of embracing that sales is about human to human communication. You can ask some questions and learn a lot more than just by looking at somebody's Twitter stream forever.
When I was a young kid, I prepared for a big sales call with a multi-billion dollar, very well-recognized brand. And before I made the sales call, I went out and I read the last couple annual reports, not the whole report, but I read the chairman and CEO's letter you know, and then I did look and see what kind of investments they were making. And I read a little bit of commentary. So I got smart and I went in and I met with a manager, not a high level manager, but like a mid-level manager. And I started pulling out all my knowledge. And I said, I know that your three biggest initiatives are these things and this thing. And he said, that is really interesting. Where'd you get all that? And I said, well, I read the chairman's letters and I read some other commentary. And he goes, none of that's true here. We don't care what that says. It's not what's important to us. And I'm like, okay, I learned a lesson there. You can't prepare too much. I mean, it's good to be aware, but maybe it's valuable. Maybe it's not. Really, what's most important is the person sitting across from you. What do they think is valuable? And you can't over-prepare out of fear. I thought I had a big chance with a big company. I won the account. It was a $2.5 million deal. I won it anyway, but it was a learning experience for me. And how much do you really need to prepare to have that conversation? It's be prepared, but have some game and don't avoid what you want to do. I see a lot of salespeople avoiding the conversations that they really need to have using email. And I see a lot of prospecting done on email and it's just spam. It's so much spam that using Gmail and Google Apps for Domains, all of it's going right into my spam filter, and it's not really spam, but they're sending the same thing to everybody, and it's a one to many things, so it's getting picked up as spam. It's not really creating value, but it's avoiding teaching salespeople what they really need to do. When you were helping people and you developed what you're using now, and I don't do product reviews and I don't talk about it. We'll just talk about, I think it's gutsy for you to do any kind of Salesforce automation, you know, where you are. And it's a tough space. Although my personal opinion is there's not a lot of good things out there. There's really not. There's a lot of things that are okay. And some of them that are not great, but you've got a pitch here on this. And it's interesting that you took up what as salespeople have complained about forever. I don't mind updating my Salesforce automation. I just don't want to do any data entry. I don't want to touch it. You know, if somebody did it for me, I would love that. Can I get somebody? Can I hire somebody? And you have somebody do the data entry. You picked up these things and in doing this yourself, and then you built something to solve your own problem. And what was the problem that you were solving by deciding that you had to create something that there's plenty of options out there already?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So when we started Elastic Sales, the kind of sales outsourcing firm for technology companies, we had to decide how are we going to manage all these different campaigns. I mean, just to give you an idea of scope, we I think over time we ran sales campaigns for over 200 venture backed startups in Silicon Valley. So to be able to manage that level of complexity, we had to use software, right? So we had to look for CRM software out there, and very very selfishly in the early days, we were just like, there's no way we're going to buy any of the available options out there because those products suck in our opinion. We don't want to be using that for 8-9 hours a day. And because two of my co-founders were technical, you know, that bias added to the mix, we were just like, let's just build something ourselves that we like. And there was not much more to that at the beginning. And I have to be honest, like the first couple of months, I don't think we had any brilliant vision or product philosophy. We were just building what we needed. And because it was very simple, we liked it. It was very fast. And for the first time, I think, in the history of sales software, we had a room full of salespeople and engineers sitting next to salespeople, watching them use the software and complain about things and then deciding how to fix these problems. And also, we didn't come from just a single vision point of view of sales because we didn't come from one company selling one product saying, let's build the best tool for that. We were selling all these different kind of products to different audiences. So we had a wider perspective on what kind of different sales scenarios and sales processes look like. So I think it took us a few months to start having a real vision. And one big pain that we knew we wanted to eliminate from the get-go was data entry, manual data entry. We knew salespeople, and I'm a salesperson, we suck at it, we don't like doing it, and it's not the best use of our time to sit there and report what we just did. So we wanted to automate as much data, you know, collection as possible so that salespeople could focus on what their job should be, which is, and what their strengths are, hopefully, which is communicating with potential customers and prospects. And we also thought of sales software and CRM software not as a database, but as a communication tool, because we think sales is all about communicating, more communicating better. So we integrated the phone system from the get-go into the product so you can call people right out of the app. You don't have to leave pick up a physical phone or anything else. You just click a customer's phone number in the software and it dials out. And by doing that, it automatically records that you just called somebody and for how long and what happened. And the same thing with email, all that email communication. There's a lot of email communication involved in sales today. So we thought, instead of you going into your inbox, sending an email to a customer, and then BCCing your CRM tool or copying and pasting software, even worse, why can't we just build the tool in a way where it just automatically tracks all communication with customers and puts it in a nice little timeline like Facebook, so everybody in the team or you can look at the history of communication without ever having to do anything to accomplish that. So that was a big part, the communication part, the data entry part. The bigger emphasis was on communication. And once we built all these tools to have really strong communication and we started tracking all that communication automatically, we realized, holy cow, we have a lot more data than the normal CRM tool. And the data is a lot more accurate because it doesn't rely on humans to report it. So how could we, what else can we do with it? And one thing that we noticed kind of as a last point to this is that a lot of times in the early days of a campaign, people like sales managers wouldn't have a lot of needs from engineering. They would just get leads into the system either through inbound or outbound measures and then start calling and emailing prospects and closing deals. But after 6, 9, 12 months, they would have all these needs that would come back to engineering and say, hey, I want you to create me a list searching the database of all the prospects in this area that we try to sell this product, you know, a year ago and we failed, and we want them with this and this criteria, and we can't find that in the software. So you need to, you know, as an engineer, spend some time and find that data in the database. And that happened again and again and again. And engineers hated having to do these jobs. And salespeople hated that they had to wait, and sales managers. So there was this conflict between those two teams. And we realized, hey, why don't we empower salespeople since we have all this data? Why can't we just have salespeople answer those questions themselves using the software? Being able to query the software and say, I want to know, I want to find a list of everybody I've ever called more than twice where at least a 10-minute phone conversation. And the last thing that happened was I sent them an email, they opened it, but they never replied, and it's been more than 6 months ago. Why is that an unreasonable request to, you know, type into a software and get an answer for? And that's what we built, a pretty powerful search engine for salespeople. So all these things were just fixing our problems, and those were the problems or pain points that we had and experienced, or the main ones at least.
It's funny, I've felt that using software before, not even only just Salesforce automation or CRM, but you don't have a vision of the, what the engineer, the designer was thinking of when you look at it. It's not intuitive. As a salesperson, I think about something a certain way, and then you get into software, and the software doesn't match my vision of what the process looks like because it's not my process. And yeah. And that's the part of having somebody sit next to somebody and say, what are you trying to do? Yeah, I'm trying to do this because I don't want to do something different. It takes me more time or more energy. So that's really interesting. Where do people go to find out more about you and about the work that you do?
So one really good place to go to is just our website, and then correspond to that, our blog. We put a lot of content that's very much related to startups and sales and new sales processes. If you go to close.io, so C-L-O-S-E, like closing a deal, close, and then .io, stands for input, output, you'll come to our website. And if you click on the blog link, you'll find tons of articles about, you know, sales and entrepreneurial sales and new sales approaches and sales technologies. You'll find any kind of talk I give or article I publish. So that's probably the best way to find out more if you're interested.
What about Twitter?
Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, you can find me on Twitter. You can go to twitter.com/Steli, S-T-E-L-I, my first name. I have to say I'm getting back into the Twitter game and being a bit more active on it. But for a long time, I was a very passive user, and I still don't feel like a great user of the platform. I post links there, I answer questions, but I could be a lot better. I need to amp up my Twitter game.
You're a marketing man. You got to market.
Yeah, true.
Hey, I appreciate you being here. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Anthony, thank you so much for having me.
He is Steli Efti, and you can find him at close.io or on Twitter at Steli. I'm Anthony Annarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. Do sign up for the Sunday newsletter. It is the best work I do each week, and it will kick your Monday off exactly as you need to. That's it for this week. I look forward to seeing you back here next week in the arena.